Welcome to the Legacy Leaders Podcast. Are you doing the best for your client to help them create their legacy? Are you creating a plan that goes far beyond finances to help people ensure that it becomes the driving force behind all decisions? On this podcast, hosts Katie Beth Hand and Stan Miller will help you with growing your practice and your clients' peace of mind. Together, they bring the best and brightest minds to share with you how to help your clients develop their best legacy. And now, here are your hosts, Katie Beth and Stan.
Welcome to the Legacy Leaders Podcast. I'm your guest host, Diane Robinson, investment advisor with IP Financial Advisory Services, LLC. Today, my guest is attorney Maureen Kroll. She's in estate planning. Maureen, thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome. Pleasure to be here.
So let's find out a little bit about you. So tell my listeners what you want them to know.
Okay. My background's, I think, unique. I am a registered nurse. I have a master's in nursing, and I actively practiced nursing for 15 years, and I still maintain my license. But for the past 35 years, I've been an attorney. My areas of concentration are in estate planning, which includes elder law, divorce, bankruptcy, custody support. I used to do personal injury because of my background. I don't do that anymore, and also Social Security disability, plus some other areas, some real estate closings and so forth. So kind of a general practice and with concentration in those areas because they all intersect.
So you're a busy woman is what you're saying.
Well, yes.
Okay. So since you went from nursing to law school, why did you go to law school?
It wasn't because I hated nursing or I was tired of nursing. I actually was in a facility where I was an assistant administrator, director of nursing, and I had a master's in nursing, did not want to get a doctorate in nursing and teach. I wanted to stay in the hospital setting. So I actually was accepted into the dual degree MBA law program at Pitt. But it ended up I only did the law school. I did it part-time while I continued to work as a director of nursing. And then life, you know, takes you a different path. My mom died suddenly. I had my second child. Where I was working was having issues. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to open an office. I'll get my MBA later or whatever. And I did not. And here I am, the same spot that I've been in for 35 years. And it worked out the way it should have.
Okay. So why did you get into estate planning?
Well, as I said, with my practice, it's pervasive. I mean, it covers, if I'm doing a divorce, we still have to talk about, okay, now you need to plan, you know, for the future without this spouse. We need to, you know, look at what you're going to have left after the divorce is settled. What are your assets? And, you know, how do you want those distributed on your passing? Or, you know, what should you do with those assets? Like I said, I'm not a certified financial planner, but of course, refer people to financial planners to help them now with their portfolios. Unfortunately, so many women still, because they're still, I think now we're going to see a difference with our women that they know a lot more. But so many that I have dealt with, the women were just guided by their husbands. They had no clue what they had, where it was, what they should do with it. So that's an example. Also people that have done, you know, that are involved in even bankruptcy, which, you know, we're trying to eliminate a lot of their debt, but we have to talk about planning for them down the road. And with my elderly clients that may need to have medical assistance if they would need long-term care. So as I said, it covers all the other, many of the other disciplines that we're dealing with, okay, that I deal with.
So if you're dealing with bankruptcy and other things, then being a nurse probably comes in handy if they faint, right?
Yeah, well, right. Yes. And that has happened.
I won't try to make another stab at being funny. So you're okay.
But that has actually happened where I've done, I've saved the life of someone who was going into diabetic shock when we were in court. Another time someone was having a seizure. So yes, the nursing skills come in handy.
So tell us who your ideal client is.
Someone who thinks about the future. A lot of people don't. They're just in the moment. They, you know, they're never going to, you know, pass on, you know. So it's someone who comes to me earlier than later, and says, you know what, I want to do some planning. And it might just be simple planning, but even the most simple will, the most basic documents are so helpful and make it much easier for their family to deal with the future. One of the examples would be that, like a power of attorney, having that is critical. And a lot of times husbands and wives think that they don't need, that for the other, but you are two separate individuals. You can't sign for the other. And if you don't do that, then you get into having to get a guardian appointed and going through guardianship proceedings, which costs more money. And then the court's involved in decisions that are being made regarding, future assets, what to do with them and so forth. So it's that client that is thinking ahead, that wants to be prepared.
So do you have an example of a client who didn't listen to you and they had some dire consequences?
Well, yeah. I mean, for instance, I've seen over these many years, maybe they didn't want to provide for a child because they have given that child assets in their lifetime. So they've already provided for them. But either, and I've seen it several ways, either they didn't put that in their will that they didn't want them to, get something from their estate because they've already been provided for. And so they pass. And I mean, they're not going to know it, but, unfortunately, it caused a lot of dissension among the other beneficiaries because they knew, the executor especially knew what, in this case, the mother, what she wanted. And there's nothing we can do about that. I mean, it's that's what it was. Another time, someone didn't put in, and I didn't do their will, but they didn't put in there that they didn't want to provide for someone. So it looked like, oh, maybe they were influenced by another child to not include them. And as it turned out, there was a contest of the will or a will contest. And that particular child did get some of the estate because they ended up settling it, but that child her argument was that this parent was coerced by the other child to not include her. So, and we're talking, serious money, and it wasn't what that person wanted. I've, again, with the power of attorney, I've seen that so many times where people don't want to spend a couple $100 to get their basic documents done. Something happens where they then can't take care of that parent because they don't have a power of attorney or their spouse. And then we have to go to court and get a guardian appointed. Now you might think, oh, that's probably not hard. Well, guess what? Once you do that, then you open up sort of Pandora's box and anyone can contest who the guardian is. I just did one in Allegheny County where it actually was the longtime paramour of this lady. They'd been together for 25 years. And he wanted to be the guardian. I didn't think, oh, that sounds reasonable. He lived with her. He took care of her and so forth. Well, whenever we filed that, the granddaughter all of a sudden appeared. And hey, I'm her granddaughter. I wanted, be the guardian. And it ended up, being a fight. The paramour won. I mean, he is the guardian for the incapacitated person. But again, thousands of dollars later. Because there was several hearings, it was quite contentious.
So you did mention that a lot of times they just don't think they need to do any estate planning. Are there other common misconceptions that you want people to know that are misconceptions?
A lot of times I still hear people saying that the state will get it all if I don't do a will. That's not true. There is a progression of who gets what if there is not a will. But again, you may not want those people to get what you were leaving them without specifying it. So, but I still get that a lot where, people don't think that, think that the state's going to get it all. Now, there is unclaimed funds that are out there. And I think Pennsylvania has maybe $1 billion or more of unclaimed funds, and which is something that I, when we do like a final, an estate and we open an estate, that's one of the things that I direct my executors or administrators to look at to see if there are. And many times there are assets that were forgotten, were not known about. And that's the other thing too, where, people think, that they'll be able to identify, oh, they'll know what I have, or they can do. No, you really need to organize and, you know, have it in a certain place. I mean, you need to do that because otherwise there could be, you know, missing information. And yes, some of it does go to unclaimed property. But maybe there's cash in the house. Maybe there's jewelry, things like that. So people need to be organized.
That's interesting because I do that for my clients. I go on and I look and it's like, oh, okay, that's nice to know. So they'll go out and get it. So
yeah.
But usually it's, in this case, I don't think I've had anyone who's had a large amount. But you know,
it's usually like $100 or less
yeah.
or something. But I
yeah.
have had cases where it's been significant. So it, you know, obviously you must, you know, need to check that. But yeah.
So my feeling is if it's my money, I want it.
Absolutely. I'm that way even with divorces. You know, I tell people, I say, why? I love to make money. That's why I work. I mean, well, I like it for other reasons too, but money's a part of it. Why do you and your spouse want to blow all your money on attorneys when you have children? And we're not dealing like with, you know, the Mellon estate or something, you know, and it just always upsets me when they want to, you know, just keep fighting.
So if I had a woman in front of you right now, what advice would you give her? Because you said women, especially the older women, they look to their husbands or someone else to give them guidance. So talk to them directly and tell them what you want them to know.
Please, please look at the mail. Look at the records in your house. Look at the statements. Be knowledgeable. Don't just count on your spouse doing it all, because unfortunately, as we get older, you know, there's more health problems. So many people end up with dementia. And be informed, ask questions, look at the paperwork, know where the paperwork is, talk to your spouse about it. And if they aren't giving you the information or won't share it with you, then obviously that's another issue. But be informed. Don't act like the, you know, oh, I didn't know anything. That might have been the way it was back in the 50s or whatever, but not in this day and age. And if you're on joint assets and you won't, and your spouse maybe is incapacitated or just, you know, just won't share information with you, get it yourself. Go to the bank, go to the broker, go wherever it is. But nothing upsets me more than when someone comes in and says, I didn't know anything. Yes, there are partners who won't share that. But then a lot of times I see women are just, okay, fine. You know, they're doing it. And I get it. It's stressful to deal with financial issues and looking at statements and making the right decisions. But be informed. Get involved.
I agree with you, because if you don't do that, someone's going to come along when you need them most and give you bad advice or take advantage of you.
Yeah. Or you might, you know, you're not, women are brilliant. You know, you might look at all this and say, wait a minute, you know what? You really should be, you shouldn't have $150,000 in a checking account. You know, the market's doing well. Maybe you should divert, you know, do this or do that. You need to be involved in the planning. Just because he's the man doesn't mean he makes all the best decisions. So I think, you know, you also can, you know, augment your portfolio by getting involved and knowing what's going on.
One of the misconceptions I come across is power of attorneys, especially for bank accounts.
Mm-hmm.
Because some banks require their own power of attorney mm-hmm. paperwork. So do you mm-hmm. discuss that with your clients as well?
Yeah. You know what? My experience in over all these years has been, there's only been one bank that I have had issues with, and that's PNC. And so if I know that my, and I'll ask the question, if my clients have PNC accounts, I keep PNC's form POA in my computer, and I will have them execute that as well, because it's just easier. So you're absolutely right. And that's something to, again, ask clients, say, you know, if you have a problem with your bank and they want you to complete their own power of attorney, that's okay. It's better than fighting with them.
Mm-hmm.
We can get that done. Not a problem. But that's the only one that I've, and I'm in the, you know, North Huntington, Jeanette, Greensburg, there, you know, this area, and PNC is the only one.
Okay, so you want to tell them what happens if you don't have a POA, and let's say you're in PNC Bank?
And you're, I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part. And what?
And your money is in PNC Bank or one of the other ones that require power of attorney.
Well, oh, yeah. So what happens, and this happens a lot, usually it doesn't come up, until there is usually a medical crisis or someone passes, but that's a different, that's then your state administration kicks in. But a lot of times, if you don't have that POA, now you're in the person that we're dealing with becomes incapacitated. Physically is not as bad because they can still maybe talk to someone, but they can't get there. But certainly most of the time it's where there's mental issues with dementia mainly. And I'll get people that come in and say, well, you know what, we need a power of attorney. I was just at the bank and we needed to do this. And here he had an account just in his name or she did. And I can't access it because it's just in their name. And I'm the spouse, right? And I said, well, it doesn't matter. You're two different individuals. So you need the power. Okay, well, then we'll get the power of attorney. Can you just give it to me and I'll get, them to execute? I said, well, I mean, you can go online and get your own POA and do that. But if I'm going to do it, they have to be oriented to time, place, and person. They cannot be incapacitated where they, don't know, like, who the president is, what, they don't have to know exact. I have to look myself, what is today's date, but what month is it, what year it is. Because if you get a POA signed by someone, and those POAs have to be notarized, or signature has to be notarized, if they are incapacitated, and you might get away with it, I'm not saying you won't, but if someone challenges it, and there was a diagnosis of dementia, or there was evidence that that person was not of sound mind when they executed the document, and it's not a good document. So that's why it's important to get these done early on. They're not expensive. And, I mentioned getting something online. I obviously don't agree with that because just like today, we're covering a lot of issues and maybe there's some practice tips in there. You just pull something off online. It may not be exactly what is needed. It may not cover all the bases. If you go to an attorney who does those, they usually have pretty good documents. I know mine is quite voluminous because I cover all aspects so that you have no problems stepping into the shoes of someone when they are not able to do for themselves.
So you mentioned being incapacitated. Mm-hmm. So how does estate planning help you with that?
Well, again, it goes back to doing these documents early on before you have incapacity, because again, if you're not, if we can't prove that you are oriented to time, place, person, again, a document that you sign off on, and let's just say you have three kids and it's giving everything equally to the three kids, first a spouse and three kids equally, we're probably not going to have a problem. But maybe one of those kids, now maybe the other spouse has died and one of the kids is saying, wait a minute, I know that dad didn't want this or that. And I know that whenever he signed this will, he was incapacitated. He was already at a diagnosis of dementia. So that could just wipe out the whole will, and be grounds for a will contest because or he may not have been doing it voluntarily. We know mom, made him do it this way, and he was influenced. Yeah. So again, it's important to do documents when you are of sound mind and, can make the right choices. And one thing too, people need to understand, you can always change your documents. I know for myself in my practice, if you come to me and we do your documents and you want to change them, I don't charge the same amount. I don't charge that full amount that I charged initially. It's just a sort of like a convenience fee, or I don't know what the word is, but to redo. And now with computers, in the old days you had codicils where you'd, if you wanted to change it, you'd do a codicil. Now you just print out a whole new will with the changes that you want. So people need to understand that those documents should be fluid. Every 5 years you should take a look at them and see, should there be changes. Like I just redid my will because I gave my daughter or spent money on her wedding. My other two kids are not near, they're not, soon to have any weddings, if ever. So I wanted it to be fair. And so out of my estate, they're going to get X number of dollars to make it equal for what I gave to her. Now, again, will that change? Yeah, I'm sure it will, and it may change not because the kids, those two kids are going to have weddings, but maybe I'm going to give them money for something else. So it should always be reviewed and looked at to make changes if you need to.
So if, let's say I have three children and I'm doing my will and the estate planning, should they come with me if they're agreeable to it and I'm agreeable to it?
That's a very good question. I don't like to see beneficiaries come with their parent or whoever. I'm, you know, it doesn't have to be a parent. It can be an aunt and uncle. I mean, sometimes you do because that person depends on them to hear the information or even just to get a ride. But I always ask them and say, look, you know, this is your document. Do you want this person in the room with you? Or can I have them sit outside? Because I don't want them to feel pressured that they've got to include that particular person in their will. So that's a very important point. You know, I prefer just me and that person. Even it should not be with spouses. You know, I also say to them, look, you know, I know you're both here together. I want you to know that you're separate people and you have the right to be in the room with me alone.
So do you have a lot of women that take advantage of that or?
Oh, nobody.
No, nobody. Nobody.
Nobody.
I understand but that.
You know what? Most of the time, those cases, they are really just giving everything to husband, everything to wife, equally to kids, which is honestly the majority of time, which is, you know, nice. And so you may say, well, why do they even need a will? Because by law, you know, it would go to, you know, but again, we talk about other things, just like you do with financial planning or whatever. I mean, you get into other discussions, you know, about, you know, the future, if you need long-term care, you know, if someone gets it, or the other thing that you want to bring up to them, if a child would get disabled and be on SSI, you know, only allowed to have $2,000 in assets. We want to be, not back to the original question, devastating results. I've seen, not too often, but I've had cases where people didn't change their will. A child was on SSI. They got an inheritance and then it knocked them off of SSI till they got back down to $2,000. So you want to, you know, make sure people can say if there's changes with anything, whatever it might be, please bring it to my attention and we'll see if we need to do new documents. Because with I'm just doing a case right now where there's the husband's spouse has passed. His other child has passed. The only child that's left is on SSI. So we want to create, and he wants everything to go to that child, but we want to put it into a special needs trust so that that child would not lose their SSI benefits. But that special needs trust will enable them to get additional things that would be allowed under SSI. But obviously they get so little money from SSI. So, and I also, you know, I inform people about ABLE accounts and that may be very helpful again to set up so that the kids that are on SSI can maybe be able to get better computer equipment or travel or, you know, something else that would be allowed. And those are wonderful accounts.
In case my listeners don't know what an ABLE account is, would you please tell them?
Yeah, it's, I'm trying to think of the acronym, when it's Better Life. It's, you know, our state has it, and you can, the parents or friend or whoever can contribute. I believe it's 18,000 a year. It's up to 18,000 and go into this ABLE account. And it also, there's a lifetime, I think, a cap of almost $500,000. You can't go above that. But it, like I said, it enables the disabled child to get to do things. For instance, I have a client who I set one up for, but she's in the state of California. So she, and she's very bright, but she's blind from birth. So that's her disability. So she researched and she was satisfied with the fees. There is a small fee that the states will charge for the administration of it. And anyway, she ended up with the account from Pennsylvania, I mean, from California. And so what she did with her ABLE account, she did buy better equipment to help because of her blindness, better computers that will help assist her. She traveled back home to Pennsylvania. She has a brother here. She was able to do that. I think, I'm trying to think what else. She maybe even some furniture or something that this account afforded her the ability to do versus the, what, $800 a month she gets on SSI. I mean, it's just such a low amount. And so it's wonderful. And it, there's a lot of information online if you want to go to the Pennsylvania ABLE account website to get further information. But it's a wonderful product.
So you're talking about the ABLE IRA? Is there a different ABLE?
I don't know about the ABLE IRA. Okay. I mean, maybe it's characterized that way, but if they just go on the website for the ABLE account for Pennsylvania, then it'll give them the information.
Okay.
That, okay. Now, whether there's within it, if there's some sort of IRA or whatever that, that's Pennsylvania sets up, that's, yeah, I'm not quite sure about that.
Okay, so if someone has a disability and they're doing their estate planning, are there organizations that you have a, that you're aware of that they need to go see that you can, you know, can recommend for them?
Yeah, well, around here, for instance, in the special needs trust that I'm putting together right now, the father of the disabled child is the grantor, and he's also the trustee, and he is named a successor trustee. The example I gave you of my client who now lives in California, when we did hers, because my client does not have parents, she's older, she's 60-some, she does not have children, so we use, or she uses, through in the trust, we put, it's ACHIVA, A-C-H-I-E-V-A, and there, there's an office in Pittsburgh, I believe there's one in Greensburg, but they are very good, and that's what they do. They work, they are trustees on these accounts, and will work with the disabled person to, or if the disabled person can't do it themselves because of the severe mental disability, such as autism or whatever, whoever their guardian is or POA, whatever. Well, they wouldn't have a POA. They would have a guardian because they wouldn't be able to make a POA. But they'll manage the whole account. They will make ABLE distributions. They will do it all. They're one. They're very good.
Okay. So tell me what you like best about being an estate planning attorney.
You know, I feel like I am a life planning attorney for, I hope I can help you stabilize a marriage or get out of a marriage and deal with your custody and all of those things to make your life more stable or, you know, safer or whatever. And I just feel that estate planning is part of that all, like to help you live a better life, have plans for the future for your children, for disabled children, if you're going to go into long-term care. It's planning for, just like I said, it's pervasive. It covers, it should cover everything, you know, and help you get through life a little better and responsibly.
Okay, finally, tell everyone where they can find you.
Oh, okay. I have a website, MaureenKroll.com. And I have, on that website, I have extensive information on my practice areas. So I think you could get a good baseline there of questions answered. But you can reach me at 412-370-5671. My email, MaureenKrollesq.com. You can reach me there. Happy to, you know, hear from you. Do I offer free consultations? Call me and, you know, we'll talk a little bit. We'll see, you know, where what you need, where you're at. And I'm not going to charge for that. But if obviously, you know, once we talk, we'll see what you need. And then, of course, we'll talk about what that would cost. I do a lot of things flat fee so that you know up front this is what it's going to cost you, which is pretty much what we do with our estate planning documents. It's not. And you get a lot of bang for your buck for that money that you're going to spend for that, because we're going to talk just like we did today. We're going to cover a lot of issues, not just, you're just not paying for the documents. You're getting, you know, good information.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the free consultation, because that was going to be my last question to you.
Okay. Yeah. So don't be afraid to call if, like, I see that, oh boy, this is bad. we need to talk. Then I'll say, you know, you'll need to make a time to come in. Also, obviously, if I need to look at documents and, you know, if it's going to be more involved, obviously we need an appointment.
Is there one last thing that you want to tell everyone?
I hope you all listen to this. This is a great opportunity. I'm so glad to be a part of your podcast. The more knowledge we have, more information, we make better choices.
Okay. Well, thank you. So I want to thank everyone for listening. And this has been the Legacy Leaders Podcast with your guest, Diane Robinson. And my guest today is Maureen Kroll. And for more information on Maureen and the work she does, you can visit her website, which is Maureen Kroll, MaureenKroll.com. And that will also be on the website, on the podcast too. So that information will be there as well. So thank you very much, Maureen, and everyone have a wonderful day.
You've been listening to the Legacy Leaders Podcast with Katie Beth Hand and Stan Miller. For more information on them and the show, please visit PinnacleLegacyLaw.com. If you like what you've learned today, do share the program with your friends and subscribe wherever podcasts are found.